Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, we got one of the youngest consultants I think I've ever seen in the studio.
We most certainly do. We have junior executive Jill in here. So she's joining us. She's not going to be mic'd up this morning, but she's going to keep an eye on things for us so that we stay on track. And a little bit later in the program, we're going to visit with someone close to her and looking forward to that conversation. But first up on the Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce a director for market development with a company called Synergy Business Consulting. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Mr. Eric Balkin. How are you, sir?
I am doing well. It's good to be back with you guys. Again, I did the show years ago and had such a great time. It only took me 5 years to get back.
To get the nerve back up or to recover?
A little of both.
So, Eric, can you share a little bit about Synergy? How are you serving folks?
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate the question. Thanks for having me back on. So Synergy Business Consulting is an IT staffing firm. So in a nutshell, we just provide IT staffing services for our clients. A little more specifically, we place technical and IT professionals in contract hire, and direct hire roles. We also offer consulting services. We can help manage our clients' client company's IT services. We have brick and mortar offices, of course, here in Atlanta, in Miami, and Orlando as well. But we have national recruiting capabilities too, so we can service anybody in the U.S. And we are also a certified minority-owned business, which is important for a lot of our clients. Most companies these days have specific goals and targets around diversity to ensure a diverse workplace, and that can include utilizing vendors and partners who are minority-owned businesses like us.
Now, when you're in that world, IT staffing, super competitive, there's a lot of players out there.
Sure.
Is the most difficult part kind of getting the contract with the company saying, hey, can we be one of your vendors? Or is it to find the actual people that actually do the work?
It varies. Right now, it's the hard part is finding the people. There are a lot of market factors that can affect this. But right now, unemployment in general, of course, is near historic lows. In IT specifically, it's almost zero. You know, anybody.
It's kind of negative, right? You're probably trying to find somebody who has a job to convince them to move to a new job.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So anybody with good technical skills right now who wants to be working is working. So that's the hardest part for us right now is finding the professionals to fill these roles.
Now, when you're saying technical skills, how do you define that?
Sure. For us, it's really anything under the IT umbrella. So application development is a big thing. Security, of course, is always top of the news, and that's huge right now, IT security. So we're looking for them. But it's really anything from desktop support all the way up to like a CIO position.
Now, when you're looking for a candidate, are they typically coming from traditional places like, oh, they went to a good college, so then they're a good candidate? Or can it be somebody that's like, you know what, I went online, there's all these free, you know, classes, and I took them, and I'm a ninja now at some of this stuff. Is that person a candidate that you would look at as well?
They certainly could be, especially if it's a more entry-level position, and it depends on the client's requirements. Some people want people who have been in that role for 10 years, and other people say, you know, this is more entry-level, give me somebody who's either right out of school or even has the technical ability and skill, but hasn't necessarily been in the job market yet or in the job force yet.
Now, when you are looking at somebody that is kind of this self-taught ninja, is there testing? Like, how do you kind of vet the people for your clients?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good question. So, yes, there is testing, and some of that is pretty black and white. You either know how to utilize the software or you don't, and there's testing for that. We do a thorough vetting process with an interview that's not only a technical interview part of it, but also behavioral based as well. We want to make sure somebody has not only the hard skills necessary to do the job properly, but also is going to be a good fit for our client's environment. So a good culture fit too. In addition to that, of course, we do check references. If they have worked before. In that case, obviously, we will talk to people that they've worked for and make sure those references check out as well.
Now, are there any other services you do other than kind of find the candidate, place the candidate?
Yeah, that's the bulk of our business, is that, but we also do consulting services. And if a, say a smaller company that may not have an internal, IT department wants to outsource some of that, to us, we can manage that for them as well. We can manage their systems.
Now, can you help a company? 'Cause we've run into several that have had this, had been handling it this way because mm-hmm. it is so competitive to find talent
right.
that they're kind of growing their own, that they have kind of their own curriculum of how we do things. And then they're finding these self-taught people and they're integrating them on maybe right. in a small role. And then they're expanding their role based on their skills.
Sure. Yeah. There are definitely some companies that do that. Some of the larger companies specifically that have the resources to develop like an in-house program, for lack of a better term, will do that. But even so, there's always a need for a service like the one that my company
yeah,
provides.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't see that as
I didn't know if you help. No, I wouldn't say it, see it as a competitor. I didn't know if you helped them kind of create that so that they would kind of, you be the trusted resource for them.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I may have misunderstood the question. Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's a really good fit for us, and certainly we do that.
Now, when you're going out there, do you have your own secret sauce of how to identify the right candidate and help make sure they're the right fit?
Yep. Well, again, as I kind of alluded to earlier, part of it is pretty black and white. You either have the technical skill or you don't,
right.
and that's pretty easy to vet out. So the more important part is who is going to be the right fit for that role, that company, that particular manager, what's going to be the best personality fit, who is going to be best in that company culture. For example, if you are a coder or developer and your job is basically to sit in front of a computer and write code all day, people who have been doing that for a long time, and I'm kind of generalizing here, so this doesn't apply to everybody, of course, but a lot of them, and this is a bit stereotypical, but they are not necessarily the most social people in the world, and that's not a slam against them. It's just what they do, and the way they do it is they want to have their headphones in, listen to music, code all day.
They want to be left alone and let them do what they do.
Right. And in some companies, that's fine. But if you work in a very collaborative environment,
right.
a very open environment, one where you're going to have to talk to people and interact with them a lot, it may not be the best culture fit for you.
Even though you might have the right skills,
yeah.
just from a culture fit standpoint, it just may not be a good love connection.
And that's right. That's exactly right. And that's important because the last thing any company wants is for somebody to come in and 3 months later leave because they're not
right.
happy. It's not a good fit. They have to replace them. So yeah, that's a huge factor.
So now how do you kind of determine, like, so you have to know your client pretty well to know what their culture is in
yes.
order to know if the candidate is the right fit.
Absolutely. That's really important. So we are very consultative in our approach. It's not transactional, not an order taker. So before I will even tell a client, yeah, we can find people for you, I will go in and spend some time with that client in their environment. I'll know exactly the type of personality they're looking for. It's going to be a best fit. I'll meet other people on the team that are doing
that same role.
So you'll
meet somebody that's doing the job so you can
yes.
kind of get a feel for, okay, this person
yep.
likes people, so then somebody else in here better like people too.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. And of course, over time, as you get to know the clients better and better, that becomes much easier.
Right.
Know?
It's not like you're there every day.
Yeah.
But maybe
yeah,
at beginning,
exactly.
you are there.
That's right.
Actually meeting people.
Yes, definitely.
And then do you do assessments or do you kind of put them through kind of the rigors of different assessments you guys like?
We do. We do assessments. Some of that is kind of standardized testing. Some of that is more question-based. But yes, we do that as well. And we will, not in every single case, but when we can, we will also meet the candidates in person before we ever submit them to the client. We want to make sure that we know that, especially if it's going to be a client-facing position or they're going to be in somewhere where they're going to be face-to-face with our clients, we want to make sure that they look professional, they look the part, everything. So
you're coaching them up as well?
Yes, definitely.
So now, is there anything, like, are there times, it sounds like you're pretty picky, like just because mm-hmm. a client has a need doesn't mean that's going to be a right fit for you, because if they're business is kind of a burn and churn and they don't care about the people, it doesn't sound like that's somebody you would want to place, because you are working both sides of this.
We're working both sides of it, and it's really very relationship based. If it is, like you said, a kind of a churn and burn atmosphere, you know, frankly, they could just call anybody, just get a warm body in there, and that's probably all they care about. That's mm-hmm. really not how our approach to the business is. We'd rather develop long-term relationships. And, you know, there have been times where it's unfortunate, but I've had to fire clients in the past because it just was not a great client for the mm-hmm. type of business that we want to do.
Right. It didn't work for you.
Exactly.
So now when you're out there and you are kind of competing against the whole variety of people to do what you do, how do you kind of position yourself, and what's your secret sauce?
Sure.
Or is that top secret?
It's not that secret. So most staffing firms will, at the end of the day, do what we do, which is they're bringing in bodies to fill these positions. But we want, as I said, to be more than just a vendor for our clients. We want to be a true partner. So we want to offer value added things that we can do that really make us stand out. And an example would be, we'll make sure that our clients stay abreast of the latest technologies, the marketplace trends, industry knowledge, to really give them competitive intelligence. So because we work with hundreds of companies, we very oftentimes are the first to notice a particular trend or demand for a specific skill set or technology. So we can let our clients know that. We can proactively build a pipeline of individuals with that skill set. And if we can tell a client, look, there are only, you know, 50 people in Atlanta with this skill set, this is going to be something that if you need these people, you need to jump on it now. We've got them. That's just one example. But giving them competitive intelligence that they can use to help to give them an edge is something that we can do beyond just, hey, I've got a developer that I can get in the seat next week.
Now, when you're working with a customer at that level and you're trying to really be a partner with them, it takes time.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have any stories maybe you can share that maybe you worked with somebody early on and they were able to grow and then you kind of came along for the ride because your people are the ones that are helping them grow?
Absolutely. Yeah, that happens quite a bit. So there are plenty of times where I will place somebody that is in a relatively high level position. It's a management level position where they have future or current hiring responsibility. If I place somebody in a role where they're managing a team of 20 people, and over time that team is growing and they're doing well and they need to add 5 or 10 additional headcount the following year, you know, of course, I've already got that relationship. I placed this person in
right.
that role.
To so begin with. Right.
To begin with. So not only do I have credibility, but, you know, frankly, they owe me one, you know. So this is the time to pay it back. In all seriousness, I've proven at that point that, hey, I've got the right person in this role and they need additional people now. It's going to make their job a whole lot easier to come to me for that as well, rather than trying to find somebody else, develop a new relationship. So that happens quite a bit. And it's really, really fulfilling for me. It's one of the most fulfilling things to see that I can really be a part of helping a company grow and be successful. Mm-hmm. That's a huge, great feeling.
Do you have a company you can talk about specifically that you kind of grew from maybe a startup or a small scale to a larger scale?
I'm a little reluctant to give specific client names because
it rhymes with.
Yeah. I'll say who they rhyme with. I'll give you a couple of examples. Even without using the names, you could probably figure these out. One is a Fortune 50 company based in Atlanta that is a large beverage company, right. Soft drink company, rhymes with Mocha Mola.
Okay, got it.
Worked with them years and years ago. This is going back to, I don't know, the mid early 2000s, 05, 06, in that area, helped to establish a team of people in their marketing department. And at the time, I was with a different staffing company, but doing the same type of thing. Grew that team, and obviously Coke's a huge company. I mean, they existed
We're not saying it is Coke.
Well, that's right. Mocha Mola, yeah. So they were doing pretty well, you know, well before I got there. But in this particular department, they were very small, in charge of certain brands within Mocha Mola. And so at the end of the day, I ended up placing probably 80% of the people that were in that team. And that has since grown. A lot of those people are still there. They've moved on to bigger positions. But it was a great success story. It was one that I kind of got in on the ground floor, at least within that division or the department of Moak. So that would be one example.
And then, and I'm sure that happens is that once you, is there like a place where you start out? Is that the usually the, how relationships happen? They ask you for a need for one small thing and then you prove yourself and then it kind of expands.
That's generally how it starts. Yes. I mean, until I've proven myself, it's unlikely that a company is going to say, come in and staff my entire IT, right. You know, because that's a little risky on their part. Mm-hmm. So yeah, usually start small and builds from there. And the initial relationships could start a million different ways. You know, maybe they were referred to me by somebody else. Maybe I met them at a networking event. Right. Maybe it's just a cold call, whatever it is. But yeah, usually start small and then grows.
And then do you have kind of niches that you specialize in? I mean, you mentioned IT altogether, yeah. But mm-hmm. like, do you have kind of some sweet spots that you guys are especially good at?
The development roles are definitely one place. Security is another. That's just so hot right now, you know, cybersecurity.
Yeah.
It's in
and
the news every day.
We're in the belly of the beast here.
We are. We're definitely in the belly of the beast. Absolutely. You know, no company wants to be in the headlines because there was a major breach or
right.
something like that. So, yeah, we definitely want to minimize that risk. So that's one area where we definitely focus quite a bit.
Now, what's the most fulfilling part for you? Is it the yeah. kind of getting the relationship with the kind of this up and coming company that really has a lot of upside, or is it kind of finding this dream job for a candidate?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, and I know this sounds a little bit hokey and cliche a little bit, but there are very few jobs, I think, where you can literally change somebody's life for the better. You know, doctor or law enforcement, mm-hmm. probably those kind of things. But in business, I don't think there are too many of those. And I've had so many times and so many stories where somebody has come to me either down on their luck or they're just not happy in the role or whatever it is. And, you know, maybe they're struggling to find the right thing and pay their mortgage and support their family. And if I can place somebody like that into a company where they're really happy, they're making good money, they're doing well, and 6 months later they come back to me and say, you know, my life is literally better now because right. of what you and your company has done. That's the most fulfilling thing for me. That's just awesome.
So now what do you need more of right now?
Right now, I need more people. It's, you know, as we said when we first started talking earlier, you know, the unemployment's virtually zero right now. So that's what we need. You know, I always need clients, obviously. You can't, sure. you need both all the time. But the demand right now outweighs the supply.
And does this something that your firm kind of works with universities and to help the curriculum to make sure these people are getting trained in the right thing? So they are, when they're coming out, they're more job ready than they...
Yes. We especially for some of the more entry-level programs. Yeah, we definitely work with people that are coming out of school or will be coming out of school in the next year. We develop those relationships early. We'll work with the schools and their outsourcing programs, their employment programs, to get those people early on. But we're really looking at any source of technical individuals that we can find. That's always vital. We want to always be building the bench.
And your offices here in Atlanta, you mentioned offices around the country.
Right.
So you're placing anywhere, you know, you'll take all comers, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. We have national recruiting capabilities. And obviously with technology these days, it's very easy to do that without, you know, physically being somewhere. So yeah, our brick and mortar offices are Miami, Orlando, and Atlanta. But we have national capability.
All right. Where can our listeners go to learn more? Maybe have a conversation with you or somebody on your team about these topics.
Absolutely. So Synergy Business Consulting is the name of the company. Synergy BC for Business Consulting. SynergyBC.com is our website. And all the contact information for each of our offices is there. We're on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook. But if you just Google Synergy Business Consulting, we're the first and hopefully only thing that pops up. You can reach me on LinkedIn as well. But again, easy to find our contact information on our website.
And do you have any events upcoming? Or
We don't have any scheduled for the remainder of this year. We're kind of getting into holiday time now. Things are slowing down a bit. But those will additionally be posted on a section of our website as well. So as those get scheduled, you can find those there too.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show.
Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate being here.
Hey, how about hanging out with us while we visit with one more guest?
I wouldn't miss it. I'd love it.
All right. Lee, are you ready for the headliner?
I am. I'm excited.
Me too. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast with Universal Diamonds, Mr. Ronnie Agami. How are you, sir?
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I'm fantastic.
How are your IT needs? You good?
I'm pretty good. I mean, you know, if we grow, we'll definitely need Jeff over here to come take care of our security and everything else.
So now, to be in the diamond business, is this a good time?
It's always kind of an interesting time. In November and December, it's a great time.
Right?
This is the best time of the year.
Now, any trends we should know about? Because I think that the diamond industry, while you're selling a product that's been around for quite some time,
yes,
maybe the buyers are a little different today than they were, you know, 50 years ago.
A lot of differences. You could say even from about 18 years ago, from when I got into the business. First of all, couples are waiting longer to get engaged. Mm-hmm. Okay. So they're getting married a little later.
But the divorce rate's still high, so that's good for you guys.
Well,
right?
I don't care if they get married, I just want them to get engaged. and then we've been seeing something for the past couple of years here where we see women purchasing items for themselves. Mm-hmm. And kind of our mantra is a diamond is a girl's best friend. Why can't she pick out her own friends, right?
Exactly. You should choose your friends wisely.
That's right. And it used to be what we would find is there was a threshold, like a monetary threshold where a woman was comfortable spending money without contacting her husband or a significant other. And now we're seeing less of that. We don't see women buying their own engagement rings. We're not going there. But as far as milestones, meaning anniversaries, birthdays, and things like that, many times we'll deal directly with the woman and not necessarily the husband anywhere in the picture.
And so then that affects how you go to market then, right?
It does. It does. Men purchase things much differently than women, and women purchase things much differently than men. And the woman's the end user,
right?
Generally speaking. I mean, I'm not one of these. I'm not selling diamond crosses and I mean, or necklaces down to your knees. You know, I'm not like into that clientele. My clientele is more female oriented. And so that's who decides, and she's deciding from a very aesthetic point of view. She cares a lot about the way something looks.
And then these women, are they typically executives? They're career women, or it could run the gamut?
It's a mix. They run the gamut. It's from somebody who does work to somebody who might work part-time to somebody who doesn't necessarily work. And you know, we don't discriminate. We'll take anybody's money.
Now, how do you kind of stay in the forefront from a design standpoint? Are you creating the custom jewelry there in your shop, or is this something that
wonderful question. So one is we try to keep our eye to what's happening at kind of the big houses, meaning like the Tiffany's, the Harry Winston, the Cartier, the kind of classic timeless designs. And then we also are constantly looking at some of those trendier designers as well that you'll find at some more of your boutique type stores. So we go and we talk to our jewelry manufacturers, and we make things whether it's more than just basic. We try to be a little hip, but not too crazy.
Hip but classic.
Hip but classic.
Classically hip.
Timeless classic. Those are important, you know?
Right. So now, when you're working with a customer, what is that process like? Like, what can a woman expect when they come into your, what do you call it, studio?
Office. So our office has a showroom, and we also have private rooms as well. Many times before somebody comes in, I mean, they notify us. Nobody just shows up. I mean, I'm happy to be surprised.
They don't buzz you. They do buzz.
There is security. But they do buzz, but they kind of give us a sense of what they want to see. They might even email us some pictures from Pinterest or somewhere online and say, hey, will you have a layout of these types of items ready for me when I come in? And then we have other people who kind of don't know. They want to get something for themselves, but they won't know. So I may ask them some questions about maybe their lifestyle, about how active they are, and things that they like and don't like.
How are you going to use this? Share with me some photos of things you like.
That's right.
Some artists you like to kind of get their aesthetic.
Or if a woman tells me she likes to rock climb, I'm not going to suggest to her something that right. she's going to abuse and break the first time she's right. out there. So, yeah.
So you want to understand kind of, so your relationships are important in your business. So
relationships are, you know, I may work with somebody 15 years ago and not, I mean, it, once in every 10 years or once right. in every 5 years, but the referral part of the business is extremely, extremely important because I may not see a client for 10 years, but they may be referring me a number of clients a year and that is invaluable.
So that's, so your clients you have, you look at them as kind of a lifelong partnership, right?
No doubt.
And that you want to work with them, like you said, even if 10 years go by. So you have to figure out ways to interact with them over that period of time so they think of you, right?
It's a challenge.
That's kind of tricky.
Because you don't want to solicit them too much.
You can't
either.
Be the salesy guy.
No, you can't solicit them too much because you don't want them uncomfortable.
Right.
Okay. And at the same time, you want like what we sell is very special and right. very exciting and meaningful. And so you want it to be all those things to the client as well. So it's hard when it can be challenging to find creative ways to get in touch with them. But sometimes, listen, I know that somebody's wife may want something and she may come and see me and then I'll get in touch with the husband or I'll try to situate myself at certain events or certain places where I talk to the types of clients that I want to meet and talk to them about the kinds of things that I have and do or things that I think that they would like and see how we can make them happy.
Now, is like when you see all these billboards for the mall jeweler, is that a good thing for you? Or is that like it's easy for you to differentiate yourself because you are so custom and so personal and the relationships are so intimate as opposed to these people that just kind of blow through whoever's got another $100.
So I don't, the advertising to me, all advertising in my industry is good advertising as far as I'm concerned. They see a diamond ring, it kind of gets them thinking about what they should be getting. But I like it also because, listen, the level of expertise that we provide for the client, you know, I've worked in diamond cutting. I was trained at the Gemological Institute of America. I mean, I've worked for diamond manufacturers and jewelry manufacturers. So, and all of us are trained by the Gemological Institute of America and everything I sell is certified. So it's a much higher level of expertise. So when somebody walks into your mall type of store or some of these people, discounters who advertise on other radio stations, we won't say their names. And then they come and see us and they're like, whoa, I really understand what I'm buying, or I understand why this is a little bit more expensive than that, or why this is better, or you know, whatever it may be, that expertise that they get from us is helpful. So I do like the advertising from the other people.
But how do you kind of educate the customer that there's a difference, like that isn't the better deal, even though, you know, it seems like it might because they have a store on every corner?
So that's, listen, once they sit down with us,
it becomes obvious.
It becomes very quick because the price difference is pretty significant.
Right. But how do you educate that what they're paying for from you, the value is so much more.
So let's go down the line with a couple things. Number one is certification. Everything is certified by the Gemological Institute of America that we sell. That is the highest level of certification.
And that's not the case in some of these other
Well, if
places.
You went to a Tiffany's, a Cartier, a Neiman's, that's what you would get. But the price difference would be significant. Now, if you went to like many of these other advertisers out there, you're not necessarily looking at GIA certified diamonds, but even within that, there's better and there's worse. So we guide and we really take our time to educate the client on why what you're looking at. I mean, diamonds don't come out of the ground here in the United States of America. Everyone who sells them here has to go overseas to get them. So whether I'm selling something that's $1,000 or $10,000 or $100,000, when I'm sitting with somebody across the table, we do everything we can to make them really understand why what they're looking at is so good and why it's such a good value. Now, another thing that we do that a lot of other people don't do, somebody buys a diamond for X amount of, let's just say $1,000. And they come to me 2 years later, they come to me 20 years later. As long as they have not damaged the diamond in the process, I give them full value on trade. I mean, can you imagine going to a car dealer and getting a deal like that? So, you know, so it gives also a client a level of comfort that I feel so good about what I'm selling them that I'm willing to take it back. And I'm looking to create a relationship with them.
Right.
I don't want to just sell them towels at Macy's and for them to disappear. And
you
know,
never see them again.
You never see them again. Yeah.
And then that kind of strategy makes a lot of sense in your world because maybe you get them when they're young, they come in, and then as they become more affluent, they can trade up because now, you know, the wife or the bride now would like to say, you know, we've been married 20 years now. Now it's time for...
So that's a big part of that strategy. There are other companies that do it, but they force people to double what they're purchasing. Mm-hmm. And that's uncomfortable. And right. So
it sounds like you're looking out for their best interest. You want them to win.
I want them to win. I don't want them at any pawn shops. I don't want them at another jewelry store. I want them in my office getting a gorgeous diamond for a great value.
And in your world, it's not like you need a million customers. You
don't get rich from one sale.
I know, but you want to serve the heck out of a handful, not a handful, but a smaller number than maybe the mall person does.
Correct. I don't have the billboards.
Right.
I'm not paying the rent at the mall, even though I'm in a nice office building, and believe me, I'm paying a lot of rent. And because I don't have, you know, 80 employees or that kind of thing, I can really make that effort and that impact on a client where they feel like they're getting the best service and best expertise that's out there.
And then in your case, you mentioned there's rings, there's earrings, there's brooches. What are some of the other things that you have?
So necklaces. You know, listen, we can be creative. I mean, I don't want to get too, you know, my daughter is here listening. but rings are definitely the heart and soul of what we sell. Earrings are the earrings, diamond earrings, studs are really kind of the next really big item. And then eternity bands, anniversary bands, from small and large sizes. And those, I happen to be one of the few people in the Southeast who specializes in large diamonds. So I do carry a lot of things starting at, let's say, $1,000, but I'm one of the few places in Atlanta you can find diamonds over 10 carats in inventory. So we really care a lot about having very special, unique diamonds. And, you know, there's not a lot of places you can find the things that we carry in this part of the country.
Now, you have diamonds, obviously, it's in your name. Do you have other gems?
I will for clients. So if somebody's an existing client, they say to me, I'd like a sapphire or they'd like a ruby or something like that. We source them in very many of the same places. So it's very easy for us to find it a very good colored stone at a very good price. That is a whole interesting different type of industry that we have a lot of expertise in because it's related to what we do. But that is a place where when people buy that retail, they get completely ripped off. So when they do, my God. So because there aren't the levels of certification like there are with diamonds. Diamonds, you can almost commoditize. You could call me from Memphis, Tennessee or Malibu, California and say the diamond is such and such a color and such a clarity. And without even seeing the diamond, but seeing the certificate, we kind of have a really, really 99% idea of what we're looking at. A colored stone, is it more blue? Is it less blue? Is it treated?
So it's more subjective.
Much more.
And then for you, your ideal customer, one more time, is now the trends are going towards women, and they might be executives, they might be entrepreneurs, they might be business owners, but they might be stay-at-home moms.
My ideal customer is anyone who's got money or good credit.
So money doesn't even matter. It's a good credit.
No, but for real, I mean, I'm looking for someone, whether it's a man or a woman, who's looking for who really wants a nice piece of jewelry, and it doesn't have to be crazy expensive in order to be nice, but somebody who appreciates it and is looking to have a great experience and an interesting experience buying a piece of jewelry. I'm pretty flexible on who that is.
And then the best way that they kind of get a hold of you?
Call us at 404-237-1050. Go to universaldiamond.com and you guys can email us from there. But, you know, we're somebody calls us, we'll stay late, we'll come early, we'll do whatever it takes.
Right. It sounds like you're more relationship driven than some of these other outfits out there.
That is the relationship part of the business is so, so valuable to us.
And then to really get in front of these people and in an elegant manner is also sounds important to you, that you're not out there with a billboard or a sandwich board walking the streets.
The guy is not spinning the cash for gold sign on the corner of Peach Street for me.
Right. Good stuff. And that's universaldiamond.com.
Yes.
And then on social media, I'm sure you have a lot of the maybe photographs of some of the stuff you've done for other people.
So if you go to, if you pull us up on Instagram on at Universal Diamond or my brother's hashtag, which is Jonathan Agami, you can see some of our rings and some of our pieces, and you can see some fun stuff that we do.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.